Hi, this is Tony Robbins. Welcome to another edition of Power Talk. And I'm speaking to you right now from Fiji, from my resort, the Namali Plantation Resort here on Vanuatu, the second largest island here in Fiji. So if you hear some noises in the background, well, they're not noises, they're part of the ambience. They're the sounds of the crashing waves, maybe a Fijian voice in the background of some of our staff. We have about 50 staff here that take care of just 20 guests full time. And you may hear some other voices, or you may hear the birds chirping in the background. I've been here for the last 6 days, and I'm getting ready to go home this morning, and I thought it might be nice to chat with you from this location before I headed back. You can probably hear my voice. I'm a little bit more mellow than usual. I've had a wonderful time, and quite honestly, I don't want to leave. But I thought in being here, it might be nice to share with you why I come here, because this environment transforms me. And I decided to take a real good look at it and maybe share with you a couple of the distinctions that I've learned for myself, at least, and see if they're valuable for you as well. The title of this Power Talk is Belief Systems, The Power to Create, The Power to Destroy. And how that comes about for me, and maybe the way to come about the subject, is to share with you, first of all, why I've been coming here and why I eventually invested in this resort years ago. I've had the incredible experience of being transformed literally every time I come here. When I come back to the States from here, I am more energized and more revitalized than virtually anything else that I do. The experience of being here in Fiji transformed you by being in the environment alone. It's not just the birds, which you might be able to hear in the background, and the ocean and the waves, but the people here change the quality of your life by being around them. You know, many times before, you've heard me share the idea that ultimately, the key distinction to shaping your life is who do you spend your time with? Because the people you spend time with will affect your beliefs, your values, how you think, how you act, who you become as a human being. And in Fiji, there's a level of happiness and joy here that is unmatched in my experience literally around the world. Now, granted, the environment sure as heck helps. I mean, you come here and you are literally in a Garden of Eden. Our resort here has been named as one of the top 10 most romantic places in the world. You go out in the gardens, you're surrounded by the perfume of plumeria and jasmine and the most incredible plant life you can possibly imagine, with wild parrots flying through the air nearby and a waterfall you can shower in, and a 15-foot blowhole right here off the side of my home here, and a reef that you can climb over for hours and hours and constantly find new types of life, and snorkeling that's better than most of the diving you go to in the world, and diving that literally is in the top 3 diving spots in the world. All of that certainly helps. And if it sounds like I'm promoting my resort to you, it's because I don't want to leave, as I've already said. But the bottom line is, what really makes people come to Fiji is the people themselves. The people here are so loving. They are so outgoing. They are so friendly. They start with a smile and they end with a smile. They have the most infectious giggles you could possibly imagine. And they live like this every single day. If you've been to one of my seminars, you know I've shared the experience of Fiji many times, but one of the things that happens when you drive down a little road here is, no matter where you go on the island, people jump up when they see you driving by and they yell, "Bula, bula, bula," which means welcome, be happy, we love you. Now, where does this experience of life, this incredible amount of joy, where does it come from? What's the genesis of this type of lifestyle? It all begins with a set of beliefs. The Fijian people have a set of core beliefs that guide their emotions and feelings, that controls their actions, and it shapes their destiny. And those beliefs are very easy to get access to. All you have to do is ask them, what's the purpose of life? And invariably, they'll smile at you as if your question is some kind of cosmic joke. And they say, to be happy, of course, what else is there? They believe that life is joyous. Every single day is a gift from God, that the purpose of life is to be happy, and that everything in life, if it's not working out right now, it eventually will. All you have to do is have a little faith, take a little action, that, you know, this too shall pass. And these simplistic core belief systems create within them a sense of optimism like few places you've ever been in the world, a sense of positive expectancy that guides their behavior and the quality of their life. And it's infectious. I mean, no matter where you were, my favorite thing to do, and one of the reasons I invest in this resort, is because when people come here, they're transformed. I mean, it's like I don't have to be here. People can come here and they get the same experience that they do in going to a seminar. When I first got here a few days ago, a gentleman was leaving and he was describing himself as a high-stress type A personality, but you couldn't see it in him when he was leaving. He had tears in his eyes and talked about how he didn't think it was very macho, but he just had expressed his feelings as he hugged all of our staff, his new family, and said he'd be sure to come back. I love to see people transform where they begin to remember what's most important in life, how life can really be. But it comes because of these beliefs, surrounded by them on a regular basis. And the core belief amongst them is that Fijian people feel like they're in control of their life, that adversity is temporary, that challenges will go away. In fact, their core belief that problems do not last is represented by a phrase that you'll hear quite often. If you ask somebody how they are, they usually say, Senganalinga, which means no worries. In fact, our band here at the resort is called the Senganalinga Band. They just feel like there are no worries. Nothing in life is worth worrying about because no problems last. Eventually, you find a way to deal with them, handle them, or life changes. And it gets better always. Life is always getting better is their core belief. One of their favorite phrases that they say on a regular basis is, I like it. That ought to give you an idea about the optimism that they have within the culture. And they say it with such enthusiasm and energy, it's amazing. That optimism is what makes people love to be here with these people. That positive expectancy. It's the draw of Fiji that's as powerful as the beauty of the land itself. And you know what? That's a beauty that we have inside of ourselves that we've got to develop. You don't have to be in Fiji to experience it. But the problem is most of us in, quote, civilized society have developed a set of beliefs that say we're not in control. You know, what if we go out and we give our all and then it doesn't work out? What if we start a business and then, you know, all of a sudden some governmental regulation comes in and it shuts us down overnight? Or what if the IRS takes what you've built? Or what if your spouse doesn't like what you've done and you get divorced? Most of us live in fear that the outside world either will control us or a belief that it already does control us. And that sense of impotency, that sense that we cannot shape our lives, but that our lives are shaped by events, by outside forces, is the single most destructive belief a human being can adopt. Because what it does is destroy our desire. It annihilates our will to win, our will to succeed, our will to shape our own destinies. If you believe that there's nothing you can do to turn your life around, then your life is over. You lose your personal power. You lose the capacity to get yourself to take action in any direction. In fact, research has shown again and again in psychology that both human beings and animals can be conditioned into something we call learned helplessness. What does it mean? It means we get to a point where we learn we're helpless. And once we believe we're helpless, we don't do anything to change it. A classic example of this has been done with research with dogs, where they've taken three dogs in one day, and they do three different things with them. The first dog, they take into a room, and they give the dog shocks while he's on one side of a barrier. And then they teach him to get on the other side of the barrier by literally lifting him up and putting him on the other side where there are no shocks. Well, as you can imagine, the dog learns to associate in his or her nervous system that if I make it over this barrier, I'll be out of pain. And by the way, that's what beliefs are designed for. Beliefs, all of our beliefs are nothing but shortcuts. They're a way for our brain to say, gosh, what does this mean? Is this going to mean pain or pleasure? And what do I do to avoid the pain or get the pleasure? That's what a belief system is. Helps us to make decisions more quickly. And all of our decisions determine our actions. And our actions, as you obviously know, are shaping our destiny. So our beliefs about what's going to lead to pain and pleasure, or our beliefs about our ability to do something that can get us out of pain and get us into pleasure, are the controlling beliefs of our life. So getting back to our example, in the first day then, one of the dogs, dog A, was trained to get out of pain. They taught the dog by giving it pain when it was on one side of the room, physically lifting the dog, putting it on the other side of the barrier, and the dog immediately noticed that the shock stopped, that the pain stopped. Pretty soon, the animal learned to do it on its own. If they put dog A on the painful side of the barrier, the dog would immediately jump the barrier. It had learned that it could do certain things to eliminate the pain, and it took the action necessary to eliminate the pain from its life. Dog B was put in an environment where no matter where the dog went, it got shocked. Whether it was on one side of the barrier or not, didn't matter. It was given pain no matter what it did. And pretty soon the dog learned that it could do nothing to eliminate the pain. The third dog was put in the same environment, but all the shocks were taken away. So no matter where the dog wandered, there was no pain. Whether it went on one side of the barrier or not, didn't matter. There was no pain given to the dog at all. Having this as a reference experience, the next day, all three dogs were moved to a new environment. It looked nothing like the environment they'd been in the previous day. The only similarity was that the room again was divided in half, and it was divided by a barrier, but the barrier was much smaller than the barrier that the dogs had to clear in the first room. Well, what happened? Immediately, they put dog A in, and they put electrical shocks on one side of the room. The dog immediately knew it could eliminate the pain, and it took action and jumped the barrier, eliminating the shocks. That was dog A. Dog C, the dog who in the first day could wander anywhere without shocks, was quite surprised, as you can imagine, all of a sudden be receiving shocks. And it did not know what to do to clear the barrier, but the dog kept changing its behavior till finally it figured a way. And when it cleared the barrier and the shock stopped, well, anytime they put dog C back on the painful side, it immediately jumped over. It taught itself how to eliminate pain, and it took the action necessary to eliminate it. Dog B, however, the dog that on the first day was given pain no matter where it went in the room, whether it cleared the barrier or not, the minute dog B was given pain, do you think it jumped over the barrier? Of course not, because dog B had been conditioned. Dog B had learned by its previous experience that it could do nothing to eliminate the pain, and it assumed that in this new environment, the same things were true. Dog B had developed what we call learned helplessness. It had learned that it was helpless, that nothing that dog could do would make a difference. So it made no effort to escape and just sat there in the box and continued to feel the shocks and the screaming pain. Now, obviously, I'm not real supportive of this kind of research with animals to start with. I'll give you that caveat. But I want you to realize how powerful this is in understanding human behavior. Because do you think human beings are any different? Well, the same kinds of experiments have been done with people. Not with shocks in this case, but rather with noise. Which, by the way, the Fijians are singing outside. So we may have even more background noise than will be bearable here. I don't know. Let me think for a second here. Tell you what I'll do. I'll continue. So you have an authentic Fijian experience. And when I get back to the States, if we can't hear this clearly, I'm going to have to start over. But I hope that you'll find this quite useful and you'll enjoy the background sounds as well. Bottom line is when people are put in this environment, there are three groups again. One group is taught that they can eliminate the noise by pushing a series of buttons on a panel on a wall in a certain order. A second group is not taught how to eliminate the noise, but invariably comes up and makes adjustments and usually succeeds. A third group is set up in an environment where no matter how many times they hit the buttons or no matter what order they hit them in, the noise never disappears. And this happens for almost a complete day. Having had this conditioned experience, sure enough, the next day, what do you think happens? The group that's learned to use a certain combination to turn the sound off immediately gets up and turns it off. The group that was not taught how to do this finds a way. The group that the previous day was put in a situation where no matter what buttons they pushed, the sound didn't disappear, does not even get up to attempt to make a change. Now, we've all had experiences in our life that may have conditioned us to believe that we weren't in control. We all have had experiences where the environment seemed to be in charge in the short term. The challenge is when we take a short-term problem and we generalize about our entire life that we're incapable of turning things around or that we're at the effect. See, you and I cannot control the wind, but we can control our sails. No matter what happens in our life, we're still in control. Viktor Frankl, who spent his time in the Nazi concentration camps, found that the people who made it through that incredible horror were those who somehow, in spite of their environment, found that they were still in control of their life, that they could control the meaning of their life, that they personally controlled their thoughts, their emotions, and their feelings, that no one could take away that freedom, that ultimately man is self-determining. With that core belief, they are able to shape their lives and have a sense of power over their lives, even in an environment where they are supposedly powerless. If you listen to my interview with Captain Jerry Coffey, what kept him going, what kept the other men going who were prisoners of war, was this whole idea that they controlled their will, that no one could take from them the freedom to think and be an American, to choose their thoughts, to choose their emotions, to be able to remember what they wanted to remember, that they could control the focus of their mind, and therefore they were in control of their life. No matter what outside events may occur, they could beat them, they could abuse them, they could threaten them, they could cajole them, but nothing could change their life, that ultimately they controlled their lives by controlling their thoughts. This is the ultimate freedom that keeps us from feeling like we're helpless, because no matter what happens in the environment, how we feel is determined by how we interpret things, the beliefs that we utilize in that core experience. Now, what's interesting about the research about learned helplessness is two things. Number one, with animals and with people, people can be trained to again realize that they're in control of their lives. Optimism is something that is learned. It is not necessarily an inherent trait. Just because your whole life you felt like you're a victim or you're out of control doesn't mean you can't change literally in this moment now. But what you've got to do is link enough pain to the old belief that you're not in control and enough pleasure to making the change. It comes back to the basic principle, which is that everything we do to avoid pain or gain pleasure. So when we have learned helplessness, all we're doing is our brain is saying, hey, no matter what you do, you're going to have pain anyway. So why add the pain of trying to change and then being disappointed? But this false belief can destroy a life. And you know what? It's easier to train dogs than it is people, because dogs are willing to believe that things can change more quickly than people. This old phrase, you can't teach a dog new tricks, is far from the truth. It's all a matter of training and conditioning. But it starts with understanding the power of these beliefs. One other key note about the experiments in learned helplessness you might find interesting, and that is the researchers discovered by working with literally hundreds of animals and hundreds of people and going through these experiments, that approximately 1 out of every 10 animals or humans, about 10% of them, were helpless from the start. You know why? Because these animals have had experiences, and human beings have had experiences in the past where they weren't able to turn something around in their environment, and eventually they adopted the belief that they were helpless. This is a belief, I repeat, that you must avoid at all costs in your lifetime. I cannot think of a more destructive belief system that could affect your life. You and I need to remember the power of beliefs. A belief becomes an unquestioned command from our brain to our nervous system. Once we believe something is true, our nervous system responds. See, you got to remember, we don't respond to what's really happening in life. We don't respond to the world. We respond to our beliefs about the world. They become the ultimate filter that determine what we allow ourselves to perceive or experience. This happens in our life in virtually every area. Literally, oh my gosh, this music's getting louder. I'm starting to feel like learned helplessness. Well, I can go out and stop them, but I guess it's time to go pretty soon here. People are getting ready, and the Fijians always have a wonderful singing goodbye to the people leaving. So hang in there with me with this music in the background. If it gets too loud, I'll have to start over, because I'm going to have to jump on this plane also. It's time for me to leave pretty soon. One way to deal with learned helplessness is to go with the flow for a short period of time, knowing this too will not last forever. In fact, I'll stop and let you hear them sing the goodbye song. Well, you remember a moment ago I said that I might have to leave soon? Well, I already left. But through the magic of technology, here I am, not at home, but in Hawaii. This is the Power Talk called On the Road with Anthony Robbins. I'm here in Maui, actually, looking out over the ocean. And so now let's get back to our subject, which was beliefs, the power to create, the power to destroy. You and I need to take a look at what are some of the beliefs that can really disempower us. And I'll tell you one that clearly disempowers people that they think empowers them. And that is this belief that we must be realistic about everything. What does it really mean to be realistic? Now, what is realistic is different for everyone, isn't it? Was it realistic for a guy named Disney to look out over a big orange orchard and think, I'm going to build here a place that people from around the world are going to fly into and want to take their kids to, and it'll change the quality of how they feel about themselves. It'll make them have so much fun, and I'm going to build this amusement park in the middle of this orchard, and not only that, but I'm going to charge people just to get in. Now think about that. At that time, things like Coney Island, they charged for the rides, but you don't charge people to get in. That was, everybody told him, that's totally unrealistic. Don't be ridiculous. It's never going to work. He was unrealistic, but you know what? He was accurate. See, when Mahatma Gandhi, a guy that was just a lawyer, who didn't really have any leadership capacity up until that moment, when he decided he was going to change the quality of life for his fellow Indians, guess what? It wasn't very realistic to think that with nonviolence, you could get the British Empire to give you your country back. He was totally unrealistic, but he was accurate. When a young man named Bill Gates saw in a magazine that there was this new idea called a personal computer, and that what it needed to be really launched was a system of operation, he called the gentleman who had manufactured it and said, I have developed a system that you can use immediately within your computer. Well, the man was a little bit skeptical, and he said, well, then come on down and show it to me. And in the next few days, this young man, Bill Gates, created a system without ever even seeing the computer. The first time he got to test it was when he was in front of the president of the company. And you know what? The president bought it, and Bill Gates' future was immediately altered. His optimism gave him the power to find out what he was capable of inside, to do the near impossible. And out of that one experience was launched a destiny for a company called Microsoft, which has changed the way people do business around the world. And it made Bill Gates a billionaire by the time he was 30. See, that's not realistic, but that's what makes America great. We go beyond realism. We create a new level of reality by starting with our thoughts, by starting with what's possible in our mind and taking that invisible and making it visible. But you can't do it when you're pessimistic, because when you're pessimistic, what you really are is fearful. See, most people are afraid to dream. They're afraid to be optimistic. Why? They say, well, I just want to be intelligent. I don't want to be Pollyanna like those people that are always pumping themselves up all the time. I'm a real person. I'm smart. Oh, yeah? You can be smart and broke. You can be smart and alone. You can be smart and fat. Smart is not the answer. Consistent action is the answer, and you will only take action if you believe somewhere inside of you that you're going to succeed in spite of the fact that you may have failed in the past, in spite of the fact that things don't seem to be working out for you. The bottom line is the past doesn't equal the future. You've got to have enough courage to be optimistic, because it takes courage. It's not being Pollyanna, it's being smart. You and I need to realize that our thoughts are things that whatever we consistently focus on, whatever we believe in our heart, we'll find a way to manifest. That this is the reality, the larger reality that we're a part of. We gotta stop buying into the limitations of the moment and be able to see those things that haven't occurred yet and make them real so that we'll act upon them. See, modern science has proven that this old stuff of positive thinking has a basis. See, science has not only confirmed the ancient wisdom, it's gotten us to go far beyond the wildest imagination that we had about what thoughts can really do. You see, today we know just the action of smiling sends biochemical reactions into our brain and causes us to feel differently. We know that just by our thought patterns, our level of optimism or pessimism about our health, we can change our biochemistry radically, even our immune system itself. So you and I owe it to ourselves to commit to this level of optimism, because it truly is a decision. But unfortunately, most people have never consciously made it. They've allowed themselves to fall in a pattern of optimism or pessimism, and now they've justified while they're there. Consciously choose optimism as your way of life. And what does that mean? It simply means focusing on what's great, looking for what's right on a consistent basis, even when it's not easy, even when you're surrounded by challenges. There's always something there you can feel good about. And if you feel good, you've got a chance to turn things around. And if you feel lousy, you immediately become defeated. After all, what is depression? It's a person who feels like nothing they can do will ever matter. That's the belief you got to avoid at all costs. You must destroy that belief the minute it starts to come up. You and I need to recognize that optimism is a sign of power. We have to be bold enough to be optimistic even when the environment doesn't support us. See, Ralph Waldo Emerson 150 years ago said that the measure of mental health is one's disposition to find good everywhere. See, this is the pattern of focus you and I must develop. It's one that we must nurture. It's one we must demand from ourselves. You know, psychologist Dr. Martin Seligman from the University of Pennsylvania has done studies on optimism for years. In fact, he has a book I read recently you must read. It's called Learned Optimism. What's wonderful about the book is it'll give you a scientific basis for optimism. In other words, it'll describe for you in detail the impact that optimism has on your physical body as well as on your career. For example, he did a research project with salespeople, and as you can imagine, during his experiments, he found that the optimists outsold pessimists 20% the first year and by 50% by their second year in the business. Well, most of us would take that for granted, but he also began to evaluate the impact on elections. I found it quite interesting to discover the way he evaluated political campaigns. In other words, how optimistic were the messages and what was the final result? If for more details, be sure to read his book. I don't want to give you all the answers to it, but I can tell you, he found that the politician running for president who had the most optimistic message invariably won. In fact, in every case he's analyzed where the speeches are available since the beginning of the United States, he's found only two exceptions to this rule. One of the key distinctions he has about optimism and pessimism is that he says it plays a huge role in what he calls our explanatory style. What this means basically is, how do we explain adversity when it comes up? Do we explain these adversities as being problems that are permanent, pervasive and personal, or do we see them as something that's really changeable quickly and easily? In fact, those three beliefs, beliefs about permanence of a problem, the pervasiveness of it to your life, and whether or not it's a personal challenge, really shape whether or not your life is going to work out at the level that you want or whether you're going to enjoy it along the way. What do these words mean? Well, first of all, he says, a person who's optimistic never sees a problem as permanent. Now, as an optimist, the minute I read this, I said, of course, you know, what else is there? That's the only way to live in life. If you saw problems as permanent, you just give up. And that's exactly what he talks about. I kind of take this for granted, living this way myself, but it's a great distinction. Pessimists, however, see problems as permanent. I can't even imagine feeling that way. But you know the truth? There have been areas in my life where I'd gotten frustrated, where I felt overwhelmed. singular areas. And when those singular areas happen in those areas in my life, I felt like the problem was permanent. The minute I felt that way, I felt totally disempowered. I had to break this belief in order to make progress. You and I have to be careful. No problems are permanent. You and I have to remember, this too shall pass. Just because something isn't working right now doesn't mean it won't change tomorrow. If I'm willing to continue to change my approach, I can find a way. If I'm committed to anything, I know I can achieve it. Those simplistic beliefs that I just rattled off are the difference in my life and the people that I've met who can't turn things around. Because I have a sense of certainty that no problem is permanent. And those people who find themselves at the effect of inevitably find themselves believing that there's something outside their control, something that will always be a problem. You and I have to avoid this pattern at all costs. His second distinction is pervasiveness. Anytime we think that a problem that we have affects our entire life, now we're in for some major trouble. Now we're well on the way to learned helplessness. Think about it. If a problem is permanent and it affects your entire life, your whole life's gonna be screwed up. Optimists almost never see a problem as pervasive. If you talk to them and they've got some challenges or some problems, usually they call them challenges or something like that, they'll invariably say things like, well, we got a problem in this part of the business, or, you know, I got a little problem with my weight. They don't say my whole life is screwed up, or because I can't handle my weight, I can't make my relationships work, and I can't make my business work, and I feel like a pig, and so I can't do anything. They rarely do that. Now, they may have moments of it, but it's very rare, because they won't stay in that pattern, because they don't see any problem as pervasive. They see it within a context, within an environment. And here's the third key belief that he talks about in his book, and that is the idea that the problem is personal. What do I mean by that? He says that pessimists always see the problem as being something wrong with them personally. Like, the reason I keep overeating is because I am totally undisciplined, or I'm weak. Now, once you start identifying yourself as being a weak person, you've adopted another belief system that'll destroy the quality of your life. You may not be weak. You just may be in a position where you developed a habit of overeating, or you've found that's a great way to get out of pain and get into pleasure quickly. It's not who you are. All it is a behavior. We're more than our behaviors. You and I have to remember that. Now, what he says in his book is that optimists rarely see the problem as being their own fault. Now, I don't know if I agree with this 100%. I think maybe another way of looking at it might be to say that an optimist doesn't hold himself as being the problem. They hold themselves being responsible for changing it. In other words, if you went to an optimist and said, you screwed up, they might say, oh, I didn't screw up. There are all these things going on, and I'm going to learn from them and use them and make things better. But they don't hold it as their problem. They hold it as a behavior that needs to be changed, or that they need another distinction. If you and I want to succeed, we must make certain that we develop antennae that are constantly searching for any belief system that infers even that a problem is permanent. The minute you hear that, you must destroy it. Because I can tell you, when I sat in that little room in Venice every day, I had a sense that my problems were permanent. And you know what? As long as I believed it, they were. And I was unbelievably pessimistic and jaded and negative and fat and depressed. I saw that the problems I was having with my financial world and the problems I was having with my body meant my whole life was screwed up. I took those problems and I made them pervasive. And I saw the problem was me personally, that I was a screw up, that I would never be able to amount to anything. As long as I held those beliefs, my life didn't change. But the day I began to change, that day was the day that I no longer saw my problems as permanent. I saw them as something that must change and that they could change and they would change now because I'd take whatever action was necessary. So the solution is, if you find yourself caught up in this pattern where you feel like a problem is permanent or it's pervasive or you feel like you're the source, it's personal, then the way to turn it around is to chunk it down. In other words, take each one of these patterns of beliefs and start to challenge them. Look at what you can control. For example, starting with permanence. If you start feeling like your problem is permanent, the first thing you should do right then and there is say, okay, what can I control? How is this ridiculous to think of this as being permanent? What other possibilities are there? And as you begin to ask yourself new questions and focus on what you can control within the situation, maybe just one little part of it, you'll begin to feel like there are solutions that are available, that things can change. And the minute you begin to doubt your old belief that the problem is permanent, the minute you begin to see there's any other possibility, you'll see permanence start to melt away. The same thing with pervasiveness. If you start feeling like, oh, this is affecting your whole life, ask yourself, what's an area of my life that is great? And when your brain says, well, nothing, simply say, well, what's an area that could be great if I wanted to be great? In other words, begin to identify the areas of your life where things are working instead of saying this one problem is destroying your entire life. If you start to say this problem is a problem that's with me, that I'm just a screw up, start to ask yourself the question, well, what areas of my life am I not a screw up? And what areas of my life specifically do I do well? Where do I contribute? Where am I competent? And again, at first you may say nowhere, but change your state and ask the question continuously and you'll come up with an answer. See, we can break down any belief if we just challenge it enough. Beliefs only control us when we allow them just to continue unquestioned. And most importantly, the way to get rid of a belief is to handle it in advance, to link massive pain to any belief that even slightly represents the connotation that a problem is permanent or pervasive. This is the foundation to creating a shift in your life. And when you make this decision and you link enough pain to it, you'll avoid these patterns. And by avoiding these patterns, you'll allow your greatest strengths to flow continuously instead of being stopped by an event or a challenge. See, I think in wrapping this power talk up, what I really want to do is just challenge you to become sensitized to your belief systems. Start noticing your belief systems and start asking yourself a question. Is this the most empowering belief I could adopt? Or is this a belief I've designed to protect myself from the fear of disappointment, for example? What would I believe if I was truly optimistic about this? And if you find yourself caught up in a rut, and again, a little reminder, corny as it may sound, the difference between a rut and a grave is only a few feet. If you find yourself stuck in that way, what you want to immediately do is start to challenge your old beliefs. Your old beliefs are based on probably distorted, deleted, or generalized information. So start asking yourself, what would a really successful person in this area believe? Somebody who's really successful in this area of their life, what would they believe about the situation? Just beginning to question, just beginning to notice the impact of your beliefs will help you to begin to create change, because awareness is the first step. How do you get rid of a negative belief? Yes, you got to break the pattern, but as I've already said, the easiest way is link massive pain to it. Now you might say, but I don't think of problems as being permanent. I don't think of them as being pervasive. I don't think of them as being personal. Well, when I read the book, quite honestly, that was my first reaction. I thought, I know this stuff. It's an interesting terminology, but there's nothing new here. But you know what? At the same time I was reading this book, I was really going through some tough times in my life. And let me tell you what it was about. I was writing my book. Now, what was the challenge? Well, the challenge was I started writing it in January and it was due in February. That's being a little bit too optimistic, don't you think? Actually, it wasn't a matter of optimism. It was just the physical reality that my schedule was so intense being on the road and running 9 companies. And then I ran into a personal tragedy with a person who was very close to me and played a big role in how my companies were being run. And so all my time literally became dominated. But I thought, I can get this done anyway, because after all, I wrote Unlimited Power in 30 days. Well, that's absolutely true, but I also did rewrites for 6 months after that. My first version I got done in a month, so I said, I'm going to make this thing happen. But I was exhausted, I was physically wiped out, I had no sleep, and I found myself on the road doing seminars, trying to write my book. After I finished the seminar at midnight, 1 or 2, write from 2 to, say, 5, go to bed for a couple hours, get up and start my next seminar and run the same cycle again. Well, as you can imagine, in that physical state, I wasn't doing too well. Nothing I wrote made me happy. And I got so frustrated. And I had all this leverage on me because everybody around me was saying, you got to get this done. And Simon & Schuster wanted it. And I wanted it done. I was missing my kids and my family, and I was missing sleep. But you know what? All that pain didn't make it go any faster because I held such a high standard. For me, the quality of what I wrote was going to have to be something that would change people's lives. And it wasn't at that level. And I got to the point where I was no longer motivated by the pain because my brain kept saying, you know what? No matter what you do, this isn't going to work out. Nothing you write is going to matter. Have you ever gotten to that point? See, I wasn't a pessimist in my life, but I was on this one project. I'd gotten to the point where I saw the problem as permanent. And I got to tell you, I haven't felt that lousy in 8 years. I also got where it became pervasive. I started saying, this book is screwing up my whole life. Because of this book, I don't have any time. I can't breathe. I can't sleep. I'm not feeling as healthy as I normally am. I'm numbering my kids. I mean, this is ridiculous. And all of a sudden, it became this major source of pain at that level. And then I started saying, look, what's the matter with me? How come I can't write this thing in 30 days and just pop it out? Well, I could have, but not at the standards I was holding for myself. I didn't set up an environment that supported me. And what I had to do is the same thing you've got to do. When you find yourself caught up in this trap, you got to realize what it's costing you. And when I read the pages, I realized, wow, this is screwing up my entire life. And in that moment, I linked enough pain to those 3 beliefs, permanence, pervasiveness, and personal, that I will never go back. If I start to notice it, I change my state immediately. And you know what happened? As soon as I decided that I would never create the problem as being permanent again, never make the problem totally pervasive, that it's only the book, and that I can find a way, and if I can't do it in this timeline, then I'm gonna change the timeline. So I'll just have to deal with that reality, whatever it takes. As soon as I took control of the situation, the book started to flow. A new book title came out and changed the entire focus of my book. All of a sudden, chapters started flowing for me. And you know what? It still wasn't easy, but all of a sudden, I wasn't frustrated, I wasn't overwhelmed, and I could deal with it. All because I now know not only what to look for, but also what to look out for. As I eliminated these 3 beliefs, my optimism returned and I developed the kind of persistence that was necessary to break through and get the book done. So all I can tell you is, as simplistic as this may sound, These three basic distinctions and this philosophy of optimism, as much as we've heard about it, we've got to renew our pledge to it, because it's the essence of how we interpret our lives. Now you might say, but Tony, aren't there times when being pessimistic is important? The answer is yes, absolutely. If you're going out there and you're trying to run your business and you're an entrepreneur, invariably, I know you're an optimist. So you need a good accountant who's a pessimist to balance you out. Because see, in that area, you got to have some pessimistic feedback. Now you're going to be so optimistic, you're going to interpret the pessimism with a new light anyway. But you need somebody else to come by and really mismatch it. And you and I, within ourselves, need to be pessimistic at times, but they need to be conscious times. For example, if you're going to go do something where your life is going to be on the line, you better be a pessimist and not an optimist before you get yourself in the situation. Think of all the worst case scenarios so you're prepared for them. But if you decide to move ahead and do that skydiving, for example, while you're jumping, you better be an optimist, because otherwise you'll find yourself being defeated by those very patterns.
Hi.
How you doing? Good. How you do?
Yeah.
Oh, do you get my Power Talk tapes?
Yeah.
I'm doing one right now. You'll have it in a couple weeks. It's on optimism and pessimism. You'll recognize it. Take good care.
Yeah,
all right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, this has been one of the most interesting Power Talks I've ever done. Back to our story. To wrap up, I think this is a signal from somebody saying, I need to wrap this baby up. Just remember simply this. You have a choice to make right now. The choice to live your life where you constantly look for what's right, where you constantly anticipate the best things in life occurring, where you live in an attitude of positive expectancy, and where as a result of that, you find yourself living with enough persistence to break through the challenges. Optimism will not remove the challenges from your life. It'll just give you enough belief that you'll be able to follow through in spite of them. And we all deserve to give ourselves this gift. So here's your assignment for this month. Take out your journal right now. And by now you got a journal, right? I'm talking about this on a regular basis. You want to capture your ideas down with pen and paper on something that'll be permanent, not just slips of paper. Take 5 minutes and write down all the most empowering beliefs you have in your life, because your beliefs are shaping your actions. What are the beliefs that have really made a difference in your life? Beliefs in yourself, beliefs in people, beliefs in opportunity, belief in your ability to turn adversity around. And also make a list right beside of your most limiting beliefs. See, just having more awareness about your beliefs can change your use of them. I know when I did this years ago, I noticed that on my empowering belief side, I had the belief that said, there's always a way if I'm committed. Once I identified that was really one of my beliefs, I started using it more and began to impact my life on an even deeper level. I also realized I had a disempowering belief, and that was that I had to do everything perfectly in order to make a difference. As soon as I saw that, I started thinking, I'm not going to be perfect. I refuse, because I realized the price. And again, that's what will help you destroy these negative beliefs. One is identifying them, and two is linking enough pain to them. That's how all our beliefs change. And here's your final assignment. Put yourself on a 10-day mental diet. For the next 10 days, practice a simple principle of focusing only on those things that empower you. In other words, if you find yourself, even for a moment, beginning to dwell on the negative, instantaneously break your pattern and say, just for these 10 days, I'm going to stay focused on the positive. And what I want you to do this for is 10 consecutive days. And just allow yourself to focus on solutions and not on problems. Allow yourself to find the most optimistic view instead of the most pessimistic view, and make sure your optimism is followed by disciplined action. This is how we change the quality of our lives, by seeing it how it is, seeing it better than it is, and then making it that way. A belief that everything in life happens for a reason and a purpose and serves us. An underlying feeling of absolute faith is the true foundation that all optimistic thoughts, feelings, and actions emanate from. Give yourself the gift of a new thought pattern and a new life. And let me remind you that this Power Talk session, like all others, is designed to give you a variety of resources to do just that. You're going to meet Paul Pilser, author of the book Unlimited Wealth. Paul is one of the most brilliant people that I've had the privilege to meet. He's going to share with you an understanding of economics that'll change the quality of your life. And I got to tell you, his understanding, the science of economics, as he'll share it with you, is simple, it's clear, it's based on fact, and its basis, the basis of the entire philosophy, comes from the fact that Paul is truly an optimist. And you'll hear that in the interview. And by the way, make sure you take advantage of our book summary this month. It's on the age of propaganda. I mean, every day we're bombarded by messages telling us what to buy, where to go, who to vote for, how to think. And the age of propaganda is really a brilliant and a witty analysis of our message-laden world and how it's shaping us. It draws on the history of propaganda, both in advertising and modern research, and frankly, in business, it'll help you to understand the ways to communicate your message most powerfully in a way customers can appreciate instead of feeling manipulated by. And the two authors are brilliant. They're professors of psychology at the University of California at Santa Cruz, both of them. I think you'll find the book to be extraordinary. So read the book summary, but most importantly, go get the book. You can get it on Amazon.com because it's not a new book. It's just a classic that very few people have ever really tapped into. I found it to be extraordinary. I hope you'll enjoy it just as much. Anyway, I just want to tell you, I've enjoyed visiting with you again. As you and I together on this tape have literally traveled around the world, and I thought it would be only appropriate to finish this tape off by sending you back to Fiji. You recall I was interrupted by the goodbye song, so rather than fight it, I decided to go out and record it for you so you could hear it in its entirety. So please enjoy the Sangenalanga Band. And remember, in the next 30 days, take control of your life. Take control of your mind. Have the boldness and the courage to be optimistic and to follow that optimism with a great plan and massive action. Enjoy yourself, and I look forward to being with you again in 30 days. Till then, remember to live with passion.
This is Gabby in the Mali Plantation, so we always play the music here. I'd like to say a few words to you that we send a recording tonight to you so you can listen to it ever, whatever you like it, or you must be like it. You like it. So you can remember whether you want to come back to the Mali and see and hear from us again. So once again, thanks very much.
Issa, Issa, pula nilo sandina, yo murako anarara wakina, na mwaneka toa maiva kaba, yo murako
Long, 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 long